Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast, your source for policy rants and raves from Tech Freedom, your Washington, D.C. advocate for the freedom to tinker and innovate. On today's show, the future of the internet as depicted in theater. Joining me to discuss her play is Jennifer Haley, playwright for The Nether, a show about the future of the internet. Jennifer, thank you so much for joining the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, Jennifer, before diving into the ways that your show intersects with tech policy and the issues we discuss on the program, tell us about your play, you know, the premise, and what inspired you to write it.
The premise of the play is basically it starts off with an interrogation, and a female detective is interrogating this man about a place he's created in virtual reality. We're somewhat in the future here, a realm he's created in virtual reality where the ethics of the behavior of people operating in that virtual realm has come under question. I don't want to give too much of the play away in terms of what they're actually doing there, but it does pose a pretty big question about should this kind of behavior be allowed. And there's a question of whether that behavior should be allowed in your imagination, but more so whether it should be allowed in a shared imagination where other people can also participate in these very dark fantasies.
Right. And I want to make sure that we don't give away too much because the show is very interesting and listeners should go check it out. And we'll make sure to provide you with that information. But just to kind of give us a sense of how the internet, known as the Nether in this play, how does that differ from the internet that people are using, that we're using now to record this podcast?
I think of the Nether as a term for the internet as it becomes more about virtual reality. The world I've created for the play is one in which virtual reality realms are as plentiful as web pages. So you could have, you know, game companies with their virtual video games that you can jump into, and that would be a very, that would be a very well realized world. But you can also, even individuals can post their own virtual realms, just like I can put up my own website if I want. So it's kind of going with this idea that anyone with creative skills and some technical aptitude can post their own imaginative realm that other people can enter into and communicate with them in that realm, play with them in that realm, if you will.
Right, and I'm guessing the play takes place sometime in the future, but we are arguably headed that way already. I mean, you had Facebook buying the company Oculus Rift, a virtual reality company. Video game makers are increasingly trying to figure out how they can make the experience more immersive. Now, a big question about the Nether is just how virtual versus real is it? I mean, are we talking just like putting on a set of glasses like Google Glass and seeing things in front of our eyes on a screen? Or are we talking more like the Matrix, where really you're in the world in a very real way, and other than the world not being real, everything else feels real? You know, you have the five senses, you can taste things, can you feel things? I mean, just how real is the Nether?
We're talking very real, and I don't get into the technical elements in the play so much. If you were to, you know, ask me how do you think this would be done, I would say that it would probably involve brain-computer implants. Once again, I don't get into that in the play, but the idea is that these are very immersive realms, five senses, but also that this particular guy who's created this particularly offensive realm he's a genius programmer. And he's actually kind of mastered, like, the sensation that he offers in his realm, the sensory experience, is actually technologically well above most of what's out there. And that's part of the detective's problem with his realm, is that the sensory experience is so profoundly lifelike.
So just to use an example, I'm eating a steak in real life, or I'm eating a steak on the Nether. It's very similar in this world.
It is similar. There's a point at which one character in this virtual realm offers another one, you know, a quote-unquote 50-year-old bottle of cognac, offers him a sip from this 50-year-old bottle of cognac, and the other quote-unquote player drinks it and kind of responds with like, whoa, like he's actually getting the sensation of drinking a sensational shot of liquor.
And really the possibilities are endless. As you say, it would be akin to anyone can throw up a Tumblr page or a Facebook page. And in this world, anyone, I guess, with the skills required to program something can create their own world with its own rules. I mean, so when people are in the nether, are the other people they're seeing just other real life humans that are also accessing the nether at that time? Or is it also virtual people who don't exist, but because of artificial intelligence, they function as humans in the virtual world?
I would imagine that there are plenty of non-player characters or NPCs in these worlds. My play focuses on all of the characters in this world being played by humans.
So if I'm accessing the nether and I'm interacting with entities that think and feel like humans, but there might not be a matching human in the non-nether world for each of these people.
Exactly. There might not be.
So, of course, the possibility to have such a sensory experience that there's really no difference between what you experience in the nether and in the real world, that poses a lot of awesome things to think about, but it also poses a lot of controversial things. And obviously, without getting too much into the plot, can you kind of summarize what the basic conflict that this world creates for the characters in the show?
It's a realm that offers its users the opportunity to behave in a way that would never be allowed in the real world. And its creator is kind of, his excuse is that if we allow these people to behave in this way here in this virtual world, we're actually kind of letting them get their rocks off so they won't do it in the real world. But the detective who's questioning him, her line of thinking is that actually, because this world is so immersive, first of all, you have no idea if it's actually inspiring the users to do this stuff in the real world. But number two, if you have created a place where there are no consequences for what people do and how they behave, are they even human anymore? Is there, if you create a place and you say there is no right and wrong here, there is no such thing as morality here, what kind of world are you creating? Are you actually kind of eliminating our humanity?
Right. So I guess to use an example that doesn't spoil the plot, let's say illegal drug use. Current law prohibits, you know, people from taking cocaine or heroin. And in the nether, someone could create a world where you can do those things without any health consequences, without any consequences theoretically for the people around you, without any legal consequences. And the real question that the play is asking, correct me if I'm wrong, is the ability to do something like take illegal drugs in a virtual world, will that create kind of an outlet for people who just can't help themselves? They have an addiction, they have an urge to do something illegal or that is morally wrong, that society doesn't want happening. Is it better that they have this safe space, so to speak, to do that thing? Or is it just going to exacerbate the problem by giving them the sensation they want, but the mere fact that they're aware that it's not real might make them want to do the real thing? Does that kind of summarize the basic conflict of the story?
In a way, although I think of drug use as a very personal thing and that you're damaging yourself. So I mean, one of the things people can do in this realm is commit horrible acts of murder. And of course, no one in the virtual realm, a character gets murdered, but no real life person gets murdered. But if you're able to do whatever you like there, in that realm, then will you take that behavior and murder someone in the real world where you want, you know, will you want to continue the, will you keep wanting to up the sense of sensation, and will it not be enough for you to just do it in this virtual world? Will it give you a hunger to do it in the real world as well?
Right, because maybe the consequences are really what someone needs. I mean, if you have the urge to kill and you go on the nether and you kill someone or something, but because you have awareness and you know that it's not real, is that just going to make you want it even more? I mean, that's a real problem for, I guess, law enforcement. And as you say, one of the characters is a detective and another one of the characters is someone who's created a world for people to do things that would be categorically illegal and horrible and universally recognized as bad in the real world, but do it in the virtual world with no consequences. Now this, go ahead.
Correct. Yes. And then, or is it, you know, if someone wants to commit murder, will this virtual realm, if it's lifelike enough, will it satisfy that urge?
And of course, this raises a lot of policy questions. So, I mean, today we, a lot of, when I was seeing some of the preview of the play and looking at the plot, a lot of technology policy questions came to mind. I mean, it really does hit a lot of those levers. I mean, one of the biggest one is free speech. I mean, right now, it's okay to basically post anything online. I've talked about on the show before a law that you could argue allowed Facebook and Twitter to exist. It's the 1996 Telecommunications Act, and it's not exactly the sexiest thing in the world. But Section 230 of that law says that a website like Yelp or Facebook or Google can't be held liable for the content that someone posts on it, as long as there are mechanisms to flag inappropriate content or copyright violations or et cetera. And it really got me thinking, who's responsible for the behavior in the world of the nether? If people can do things that are maybe offensive to the player characters, the other humans who are just walking around as their avatar, you know, who's liable for the trauma that happens there? You know, I say something mean or slanderous to you in the nether. Is that something that's actionable in the real world? If I, you know, say disparaging things about someone in the nether, but don't carry that into a real world medium, like a, I guess, a newspaper, you know, how do these things get dealt with? I mean, so when you were inspired to write this play, did it ever occur to you just how difficult some of these, I guess, regulatory questions, like how lawmakers would deal with the nether? Are there characters in the show that are kind of grappling with this?
Well, so many things from that. That's definitely a huge question that came up, like during Gamergate, for those listeners who are familiar with Gamergate, as to whether 4chan and some of those other platforms were the platforms actually responsible for letting this hate speech be public. Number two, there's the case of the cannibal cop in New York. For those of you who don't know about the cannibal cop, it was basically this cop who was in these chat rooms creating these fantasies with other people in the chat rooms about kidnapping women and things he was going to do to his wife and just the most horrible fantasies imaginable. But he claimed that he never had any intention of doing that in the real world. And that was a case that was coming to light as we were in rehearsals for the world premiere of this play in LA in 2013. And in terms of me thinking about all these questions in advance, I didn't really start grappling with these questions until I was well into the play. I thought I kind of wanted to create like a procedural, almost like a television crime procedural for the stage, but one that would actually be interesting and would have real moral questions it was asking and that wouldn't get all wrapped up by, you know, okay, you know, the bad guy's in jail after 52 minutes.
Yeah, I think one of the knocks against procedural shows, at least one of my knocks, is that, I mean, really, have they not figured out every single possible plot for an episode of Law and Order at this point? But I'm almost positive that none of those crime shows have come up with a plot just as gripping and morally questionable as yours. It really poses a serious question to the viewer. And if you do go see the play, I would be surprised if you didn't have some questions at the end, if you were kind of in a weird gray area, because I certainly was. I wasn't sure how to deal with the question of who's responsible, is this a good idea? And another policy issue that arose is just law enforcement. I mean, we see a lot with the Apple versus FBI kerfuffle over the iPhone and other issues of end-to-end encryption, which we've talked about on the show, where the basic principle is if you and I use WhatsApp or iMessage, you send me a message, I can see it, I send you a message, you can see it, that's it. You know, the FBI could walk into Tim Cook's office with a gun to his head and said, show me the iMessage, and he can say, I can't help you because it's end-to-end encrypted. I mean, and the platform that was created in the nether for this horrible, morally bankrupt behavior to occur, I'm guessing there's some degree of anonymity. And there's an incentive for the guy who created this platform not to give up the names of the people who are involved or not to necessarily be too cooperative with law enforcement. And you could see a situation where the real life behavior happens that's bad. Let's say it's murder. And law enforcement would love to find out who was murdering people on the nether, because maybe there's a connection there. I mean, where would you start? You'd start with the people who fantasize about this behavior because, you know, that might help narrow your search. And of course, that's a big issue. I mean, does the play kind of get into that cooperation with law enforcement issue?
Definitely. I mean, the guys in this interrogation facility, which is in some ways a shady facility itself, because it's called an investigative unit of the nether. And you find out that this online community has actually created a whole policing system of its own in the real world. And it is powered and funded by business interests, because so much commerce is going on now in the nether. They basically, created a whole political system for virtual reality with this branch of it that operates in the real world.
So there are some serious governance questions about, you know, if you had something that was so immersive, would it require a separate entity to govern it? Because the traditional model of government might not be equipped to understand these things. And clearly the guy who created this platform has a unique knowledge of the nether that maybe the cops don't have, or that the Congress people of this future world don't have. I mean, it's crazy to think about, but we're not that far away from this. I mean, who's going to, new technology always poses challenges for regulators and law enforcement, and they might not be able to keep up with it. And if you have something like the Nether, where you have user-generated content, people constantly creating new platforms and new ways to get their rocks off in ways that would be just, universally despised in the real world, who is in charge? And are you better off having a body that enforces these things that is totally virtual? Or are you better off trying to somehow get some old politicians to understand something they might not be able to?
Well, in the play, the guy who runs this realm, he's a master hacker. So you were saying about Tim Cook, he says, and I believe him, he says that he doesn't know who comes to the realm. He has encrypted the identities of the people who come to the realm in such a way that even he does not know who they are. Nobody knows who anyone is. And one of the frustrations on the part of the detective is that her agency cannot get these identities. They have to send in a detective to go investigate this realm as a player or a user in this realm in order to gather information on the people there, find out real world, try to get real world information out of these people so they can find them in the real world, because they cannot find them using technology because the encryption is so sophisticated. And the other thing about the play is that it does give you the sense that the legal bodies of the real world cannot keep up with it, with what's going on in virtual reality, that this investigative unit of the nether, that this whole political system has formed in order to try to keep up with what's going on in virtual reality. Because in the real world, the laws vary from country to country, and real world politicians and can't really even keep up with what's going on in the nether.
Yeah, I mean, you've heard about, you mentioned Gamergate. There's also been a lot of law enforcement and counterterrorism officials have been concerned that people are planning terrorist attacks on World of Warcraft, or they're chatting with each other on PlayStation 4, and that there's an imperative for law enforcement to get in that world and to create, you know, World of Warcraft accounts just so they can monitor that traffic. Clearly, as communication gets further and further out of the traditional realms of wiretap ready things like landline telephones, and you get into the issue of encryption, this certainly poses a lot of free speech concerns. And just to put you on the spot, do you have any personal thoughts about how something like this would be dealt with? Would you err on the side of, you know, free speech and these are good outlets for people to realize their fantasies without real world consequences? Or would you be closer to the detective who is really worried that this is legitimizing reprehensible behavior by giving people a platform they shouldn't have?
Here's the thing. I went into this play as a big, you know, believer in the First Amendment and free speech and freedom of the imagination. And as I was writing it, I started doing some more research and I came across a video game that had been released by this Japanese gaming company called Rape Play. And it involved you as the first person shooter, in a way. You stalk a woman and her two children on public transportation, and then you can kidnap them and take them back to your place and do all kinds of awful things to them. This was a real game, and the company eventually pulled it because there was so much public outcry against it that it was affecting the sales of their other games. It wasn't because anyone came along with a law. It was because it was affecting their sales. But when I realize that there was something out there, a game that had actually been created that was so awful, and to think of people actually quote unquote playing this game was so appalling to me and so offensive to me. It stopped being, I felt like my play was an intellectual exercise, and this kind of finding out there was some real world correlation took it out of the intellectual exercise realm for me, if you will, and put me in the place of having to say, I don't know. I tend to think some of this stuff should be regulated, but I don't know how people are going to regulate it, because there's always encryption. There's always going to be people who can find a way around the locks.
Yeah, I mean, this certainly poses a lot of interesting questions. One of them that you just raised of the issue of self-governance in a world of the nether and in a virtual reality world, will there be enough just people creating standards for themselves? Standards just arising kind of out of spontaneous decision-making, just people saying, you know, that platform you've created, it's really bad. You should shut it down. And anyone who uses it is a bad person. You know, some platforms might be considered good, some might be bad. And those public pressure will certainly play a role, as you mentioned, with that lovely game that was created by the Japanese game developer. Clearly, people were not amused by that. And because of the power of public opinion, it was shut down. But I mean, certainly, The list goes on. I mean, there's issues of free speech. There's issues of cybersecurity. How secure is the system? There's issues of law enforcement cooperation with tech companies. There's moral issues. There's issues of whether virtual behavior encourages real world behavior. And we have the controversy over video games and mass shootings. And, I would argue that there's not much of a connection there, but there are certainly politicians who argue otherwise. Before we go, I want to make sure everyone hears about how they can see the play. So can you go ahead and explain what the timeline is and how people can take advantage of this this really thought-provoking exercise?
The first preview of The Nether is on April 4th. That's a pay-what-you-can night. The show runs through May 1st, and to buy tickets, you'd go to woollymammoth.net.
All right. Well, listeners, if you're in the D.C. area, please make sure to get tickets. It will certainly leave you thinking. I have no doubt that you will have a lot of thoughts, and this will really, really pose some tough moral questions and dilemmas. But it's certainly worth doing, especially as our real world gets closer to the virtual world and as some of these questions become real life concerns. But that's it for today's show. My guest has been Jennifer Haley, playwright for The Nether. You can catch that at Woolly Mammoth in DC starting April 8th. Jennifer, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much. This was great.
Follow us on Twitter at Tech Freedom or on Facebook.com/Tech Freedom. Find this podcast in the iTunes store or on your favorite podcast app. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review. It will help others find the show. Thank you for listening.
Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.